welcome to another episode of Cake Wolf's Happy Hour. I am your host, Cake Wolf, also known as Matthew Fishgold. This episode is brought to you by The Padded Room. Darian, thank you for letting us syndicate with you. Very nice. We're going to steal your audience right from under your nose, so I do appreciate that. I am here with my co-host, a new member of the Cake Wolf Happy Hour. An old friend of mine, a bestie for a very, very long time. This is Mr. Delarthian. Delarthian, say hello to the gang.
Hello to the gang. What's up, people?
So, as always, we will be building a cake today. And as a suggestion from Ron Martin of Resurrection Zombie 7 podcast, I'm going to explain exactly what that is, because it might be a little confusing if we just muddle through it and expect you to figure it out along the way. So, building a cake, we're basically going to be covering the icing of our podcast today. The icing is going to mainly be what we've been up to and getting to know the co-host, Delarthian, here. Then we're going to dig into the filling, which will be a discussion mainly about Split, the 2016 horror movie that has a little bit of a superhero bend to it from M. Night Shyamalan, and just a couple other things about superhero horror crossovers, including a small discussion about masks. Then we're going to finish off by leaving our crumbs, which is just a kind of random section where I just do whatever the hell I please. And that's going to be your show for the for today. So, let's get into it, Delarthian. We're going to get to know you, buddy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Thank God.
So, as I understand it, you do have a very particular taste when it comes to horror. It's got a kind of sick and demented torture bend to it. Sasson of butt rape, perhaps?
Say what? Alright, let's keep it straight here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sure. The more twisted the movie, usually the better.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand, you've recently seen the 2006, actually, movie Broken. What did you think about that? And if you could give us a little synopsis on what the movie is.
Honestly, I kind of thought the movie was crap, but it,
crap is kind of my wheelhouse, so you're already appealing to me.
Yeah, I know. I know some of the crap that you watch. I don't know, it's about the chick gets stuck in the woods with some, honestly, he had to have been retarded, but hey, he figured out how to get a woman in the woods by themselves, so, you know.
Yeah, you Whatever. Can say retarded on this podcast, as well as any other words you like, so...
Well, good, because I just did. but yeah, he chains her up, I think breaks her leg, cuts her open, does all sorts of, you know, creepy,
are they
horrible crap to her.
Letting you know why he's doing this, or are you just kind of organically learning?
It's been a little while since I watched it, but I'm pretty sure that they sort of hint at it and get to the point that he's looking for a wife, someone to cook him meals and keep a garden and, you know... I'm not sure why he needs a wife, he doesn't even have a house, but hey, whatever, to each their own.
So this is kind of like, I mean, I guess that's why you would say that he's possibly retarded, because my go-to when I'm looking for a wife is just a Craigslist ad, or, you know, online dating...
Yeah.
Or even just standing on a street corner with a sign that says, suck my dick, like...
Well, yeah, he seems to jump right past all that, and, you know, let's get straight to the housework. Must be his thing, but, I mean, if I remember correctly, there is a sex scene in it, which, in its own right, was a little creepy, but, you know, hey, whatever.
Was it creepy because of, like, what he was into, or it was just uncomfortable because she was unwilling?
Right, well, she was willing, but only because, if I remember correctly, again... he has her daughter or something locked somewhere, and he'll kill her if she doesn't agree or something stupid.
So it's kind of like a vague understanding that she has that he may or may not have.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
so it's sort of like the what would they call that? The like Twinkie on a string in front of her face, just yeah. leading her along.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it's your typical submission rape scene, and I don't know, because of how bad the camera's work was in it. It was just awkward. Awkward is the best way to describe the entire movie.
Really,
it's just it had a few moments. It had a few decent scenes. Some of the damage done to each other was pretty decent, but for the most part, it was just one of those movies that you walk away going, did I really just waste that much time in my life?
It's hard to pull off a movie with that kind of subject matter and do it tastefully.
Oh, who cares about tastefully? Make it gruesome, make it bloody, make it just so ridiculous.
So your objection to it is based off of, like, it not satisfying that need for the extreme.
Well, in my opinion, if you're going to go that route with a movie, you're going to go that far out and make this shit up. And especially in today's day and age, where all horror movies, in my opinion, are just complete and utter horseshit. So if you're going to make one,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to go that route, just go all out. Just go balls to the wall from the beginning, make it ridiculous, make it crazy, because at least that way it's entertaining.
Okay.
If you try to make it kind of realistic and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, all you're doing is taking away from the potential of the movie, because everybody knows that it's complete horse crap anyway.
Right.
What you're really watching that movie for is to see that ridiculous crap that, you know, just doesn't happen in the day-to-day.
Which, it's kind of humorous that it does not deliver what you're saying. It's actually... from Dimension Extreme, and the cover of it looks like gruesome. It's got this woman's belly with a giant gash across it,
yeah, like which does kind of happen in the movie.
Yeah, it, I don't know. It feels like it should be more than what you're saying,
yes.
But because it's not, I mean, I don't know. When I think of this is a movie I saw recently. When I think of what you're saying, like the ridiculousness of just going out there and doing it. It's an older movie. I think it was in the 80s. It's Street Trash. And Street Trash has a really weird tale to it. Like, I don't. It's kind of all over the place, and it's not really trying to give you a cohesive story. But it's fun. So it's revolving around bums that... and just their lifestyle and all of the wacky shit that they get into. And they throw in this... wine that is circulating throughout the town and that some of the bums are getting for dirt cheap. I think it's like going for a buck a piece. And when they drink it, they basically melt to nothing and
sweet.
In really gruesome and disgusting ways. And the special effects for it are amazing. When this one guy is melting, he's like trying to dig the liquid out of his body and he's just ripping chunks of his flesh off. And it's gross. It's so disgusting, but it's amazing in that way. So that movie has a very weird rape scene in it where the one bum who's like the lead character in the film, he picks up a high-class broad at a very upscale restaurant. She's so drunk she doesn't realize who she's walking away with, and when he brings her back to his junkyard hovel, she thinks that like she's going to a fun house or something. She's got no clue. She's so drunk out of her mind, probably on drugs too. And so he bangs her, and then he basically just pushes her aside and tells her to fuck off. And she's there naked in this tire pit that he lives in. And while they're fucking, you see all of these bums, and this is a night scene, so there's like mist everywhere and it's very moody. And these bums are coming out from like these ruined cars and like from underground where they're like living in just strange hovels. And they're just bums. They're not, like, mutants. They're not vampires. They're not monsters of any kind. They're just bums that are dirty.
Right.
And they start sniffing the air, like, I smell pussy.
They can smell that shit.
I smell free pussy. Yeah.
It's nearby.
It's like somebody just put out a buffet of like barbecued ribs that they're being attracted to, and they circle around the tire pit that he was in, and they just tear it apart after he's done, and they pull her out, and they don't show the rape, but it's like she's screaming and you know what's going on. There's this real portly dude that's like licking his lips and humping the air, like getting ready for it. It's bizarre.
See, and that's what I mean. Movies like that, that's great. I love movies like that because you go into it knowing that it's going to be ridiculous. You know it's going to be absolutely absurd.
Right. It's a movie called Street Trash.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, you're not going to see the blockbuster hit of the year, you know? And actually, what you were saying reminded me of something. It's actually a movie you suggested a long time ago. I think it was called The Hitchhiker.
Oh, yeah.
He had no idea why this dude was doing this. All this crap, he's going after these people. Like, just, it's ridiculous.
From The Hitcher.
The Hitcher, there yep. You go. Right from the beginning, he's just, I'm gonna kill everybody. And it was a great freaking movie. Why is he doing it? Who gives a shit? He's just killing everybody.
Yeah.
And he's doing it with fucking style, too.
You act amazing. Like, they don't really come out and say it, but you do find out organically through watching the film that the reason he's doing it is kind of because he wants to die, but he's not up to doing the suicide thing because that's not his style. So he almost like waits at this one point for the lead actress to off him, and she doesn't do it. And you see the disappointment in his face. Like, he's just letting her have that moment.
Totally.
And actually, that was the remake that you watched. There was an original, and they're actually both really good.
Yeah, so, I'm pretty sure you told me about that back then, too.
Some remakes can do it well. But what I was going to go into with the Street Trash, they up it past that point to where, after that scene, there's this really bizarre scenario where a dude gets his cock ripped off. He's a bum. He gets his cock ripped off by another bum. And then the bums basically play keep away with the severed cock from the dude who's cockless and bleeding everywhere, running after his dick.
Of course.
And it's like this really bizarre, like there's this music going along to it as they're passing the dick back and forth. Well, dude's trying to catch it. It's just nuts.
Fucking hot potato, man. I mean, what do you do when you catch a dick?
I mean, I don't normally try to catch dicks, but I think if I would... if I'm a bum, I might put it in a hot dog bun.
There you go. But
me, myself, I'd probably put it on ice and maybe put up some signs. No. Lost dick, like, you know, lost puppy.
No, you just chuck it down the street at the nearest guy or girl, depending on how fucky you're feeling. You know, get that shit ready.
Yeah, I guess that's better than the whole, like, Craigslist ad or the online dating. Just huck a dick at someone. Hey, I like you.
Exactly.
Dude from Broken could have taken a shine from that.
As long as it's not yours.
So, now that we know a little bit about what kind of horror you like, I wanted to mention a story of yours that happened before I knew you, but I feel like it's very horror-related and the listeners would enjoy it.
Uh-oh.
It's your slasher-stalker scenario that you had.
Slasher-stalker.
All right. Well, I see it as a slasher-stalker, but okay. There was no actual stabbing involved.
Okay.
So I'll start the story, and I'll let you carry it on from there so you know what I'm talking about.
That would be helpful.
Okay. So you start seeing this chick, and she's digging on you. You're digging on her. You happen to take her away from someone in the school who has a bunch of friends, and his friends are big. Main dude is kind of tiny.
You really so, love this story,
I
don't
do,
you?
I do.
Why do you? You just love this story because at the end of it, well, in the middle of it.
So yeah, and you lived on a farm, and that is kind of why you look a little bit like Jason Voorhees. Dalarthian is huge. He's a big dude, and he's got arms that are basically the size of my torso, so...
That's a bit of an exaggeration, but hey, okay.
Yeah, not too far of one. So, yeah, he's up on a ladder, and you're picking cherries, right? You're like, pretty high in this tree.
Apples.
Apples, okay.
Top of the tree.
Yeah, okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
you
of course
carry
I
it from here.
Of course
I do. All right.
Well, so... For anybody who's picked apples, to get the top of the tree, you have pretty much have to stand a straight ladder up, pretty much straight up and down. So you're not very stable up there, and when you're listening to music in a headset, you don't really pay a whole lot of attention to what's going on around you. So these guys, they come, they knock this ladder over backwards, land on my back, pretty much typical beat down from that point on, seeing as how I couldn't breathe or do anything at that point, other than cover myself up and, well, pretty much get the shit kicked out of me. So I'm guessing the point he wants me to get at here is after about a few weeks of recuperating, seeing as how I couldn't walk right afterwards.
Yeah, and you said that after that happened, it was that bad that you had to crawl across practically a main highway for the area that you were in. These, I mean, cars go by there doing what, like 70 to 90?
Yeah, typically.
Yeah. And you crawled across this 2-lane stretch of road.
Yes, I did.
To get to the farm.
Correct. So
that's scary.
So I recuperate, you know.
Were you thinking much when you were crawling at that point?
Like, of course I was.
What was going through your head at that point?
I'm going to die.
Yeah.
I'm going to get run over. The end of my existence is going to be at staring at a tire.
Dude, if that happened to me, I'd probably just lay there. But, I mean, that's kind of a testament to your physique. You're built to take damage.
That's what I appreciate that.
I mean, when I look at you, that's what I think of. So, I mean, yeah. Dude's been in a lot of fights. And it's not like he's an antagonist. He doesn't look for it. He's just got... If you're the kind of person or you know somebody that just is a big dude that looks scary but isn't really like a bastard and ends up getting into a lot of fights, then you know what I'm trying to get at here. There's always somebody that sees someone like that and just wants to prove something.
Be a tough guy. You know how you prove you're a tough guy? By walking up to somebody big and starting a fight. Apparently, my entire life, this has been a proven fact because everybody wants to be a tough guy.
Right. So, sorry for interjecting.
But anyway, so I heal up.
Oh, and how many, I gotta ask, how many guys were there?
There were four.
Four of them, okay.
And to get facts correct, dude wasn't her ex, didn't take her from him. That's the way he saw it.
Oh. Okay.
They were never actually dating. He wanted to move in on her, and she actually asked me out. Pissed him off even more because I actually had nothing to do with it. I didn't steal her away from him.
Well, that makes him even more of a prick.
Right, exactly. So it made me not feel bad at all when I tracked them down individually and made sure that each one of them visited the hospital.
You did this, like, as a... Obviously, like... I mean, how... I don't know. I'm kind of confused here how you, like, found them... At moments where they were vulnerable, like, you had to have been watching them for a while.
Let's just say I did some research.
Okay.
Talked to the right people, you just word things correctly, nobody knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. And they might figure it out after the fact, but how are they going to prove it?
Right.
And not to mention hick towns, nobody actually wants to involve the cops, especially when nobody dies. They just want to forget that it ever happened. Or, in my case, get revenge.
So I said you were on a farm working at this point in time in your life, and you said Hicktown. So this is kind of like, just to paint an image for the listeners, a very small town kind of atmosphere, but it's also very sparse. Like, there's not too much around except farms.
It's all farmland.
There's maybe one grocery store, like, 20 miles away.
The grocery store was only put in like 5 or so years ago. Before that, you had to go like half hour, 45 minutes to get to a grocery store.
And you got one watering hole that everyone goes to. Like one bar.
Correct. Actually, surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly considering our society, but there's actually 3 bars.
Okay.
There's more bars than there are gas stations.
And more bars than grocery stores.
Yep.
So beer is more important than... Well, that's the kind of fuel you want instead of...
Yep, there you go. That's the world we live in.
Yeah, so you track each one of them down, you beat them to a pulp, and you put them in the hospital. But did you get the last guy, the tiny one that needed friends with him?
Yeah.
I
waited till last.
Because I remember there's more to this, where he comes later.
Oh, yeah.
So this was like, a month later, or?
It was... it was not long. Well, actually, it was in between the period of getting to each one of them, because obviously that's not something that just happens overnight.
Okay. So he realized. So this guy actually came to you.
He realized what was going on.
Okay.
He is the only one who actually did, and somehow he got a hold of a shotgun, and I was there alone, minding the store. Family owns a store. Comes in, starts waving it around. It was at a point in my life where I really didn't care too much. So I walked over, told him to do it. When he didn't, I took it from him.
When you said to do it, where did he have the gun?
At my face.
That's fucking crazy.
Well, I figured either he would do it and, you know, lights out and game over.
You would think that if someone would do it, they would just do it, though. Probably.
Well, unless they had something to say first or
that's
whatever.
True. Might but wanted a little witty quip.
Or, you know, maybe just, you know, wanted to start all over again and give me another beatdown and didn't have the friends to do it. But
sure.
Either way, the way I looked at it is either at some point he's going to put that gun down and then I get what I want. Mm-hmm. Or he'll do it, and then I don't want to worry about it.
Right.
I don't view death, for those of you out there, I don't view death the way most people do. The way I look at it, heaven, hell, all that other crap that about, you know, what happens after, I don't know that I believe in any of it. If I believe in anything, it's that the lights go out, game over, nothing. There's just nothing. So all your worries, all your doubts, all your fears, everything just disappears and you're gone. So if you're having a bad day and or a bad period in your life or whatever, game over sounds good. So I was at that point. I was ready for that.
And obviously he did not pull the trigger.
Obviously not. Since I'm there.
Add a little levity.
So, but yeah, so I got the gun away from him and he limped home. Well, more so crawled back to his car and then I assume went home, probably hospital. But I don't know. Never bothered me again after that.
I assume, yeah, none of them did, right?
Well, nobody in the entire high school did. Because even though it's a small town and nobody likes to get into actual official other people's business involving cops and stuff like that, they also gossip like old women, all of them, even the kids. So,
gossip and hens, yeah.
So by the end of the month, everybody knew what had happened, just nobody actually talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly I became the psycho of the high school, when they're the ones who did it first. But hey, whatever. You know, that's high school, I guess.
I mean, if you look the part like fucking Kane Hodder from Friday the 13th, you might as well have the story to back it. So Dalarthian's origin story for you guys. Thanks for saying that.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
Thanks for forcing it.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate that.
So, just some horror-related things that I've been doing lately. Been playing a Dreamcast game, old Sega Dreamcast. Still like that system. It had some gems on it for horror fans. And one of them is Sword of the Berserk, which is mighty fantastic. If you're a fan of anime and a fan of horror, you gotta check out Berserk. It's this is a spectacular anime series, and the video game takes place after the anime, so you're able to get a little bit of taste of what's happening beyond the story that they leave you off at in the anime itself. And basically, what's so cool about the storyline itself is the progression of the main character. His name is Guts, and this is because he was found by a band of mercenaries under a tree full of dead bodies, the only infant alive in an entire town that was just piled around this tree, corpses everywhere, babies crying in there. And the leader of the mercenaries had a woman, and he treated her with respect. She always wanted a child but couldn't bear them, so she picks up the baby, and they all call him Guts. Since they get this baby, she becomes ill, she dies, and just a little bit of bad luck is kind of a, like, happening, but you can see how it's not his fault. However, he's blamed for it by the leader of the mercenaries, so he tends to take things really... He makes Guts have a horrible childhood, basically. The stuff that Guts goes through is incredibly awful, but it makes him into a beast. He becomes a strong, hard-headed, just not giving a shit motherfucker.
Yeah, the whole father story, it reminded me of pretty much every movie you've ever seen where the father takes it out on the kid. I mean, he knows, obviously, that it wasn't his fault, but he needs somebody to blame, and he's pissed off that his woman's gone, so he just, you know, hey, look, target, let's you know, let that loose right there.
So I don't want to go too far into it, but just give you a little horror taste on the beginning of the tale. It is a long fantasy story with a straight-up horror bend to it. As you're progressing through the story, there's a lot of really sick and twisted things, torture, demons. It's an awesome tale. And the video game kind of disappoints me in a way. I love the story in it because it's taken directly from the comics that the anime is based on. So the storyline is strong. However, the gameplay is just kind of like quick time button events mixed with some just button mashing beat 'em ups. So it's just fight to fight with storyline in between. It's almost like watching the anime because the storyline aspects of the game stretch on for a half an hour or more at a time, and the actual fighting and gameplay that you have in it maybe lasts 5 to 10 minutes.
This was like God of War. The God of War games are very similar to that. Very button mashy, and then you get the press this button for this effect, blah, blah, blah. And
very true, yeah.
And if you're into that sort of thing, that's more power to you. I mean,
yeah.
And actually, the Naruto, there was a new, I don't know, it was basically a fighter.
Right.
And it did a very similar thing. The fights would last, you know, a minute, 2 minutes, and then you'd have these like 5-10 minute cutscenes, which I actually personally, as a fan of Naruto, actually found that to be terribly amusing because it actually went further through the story than I had ever seen. So I actually got to see what happens in all the episodes that I haven't seen. So it was actually worthwhile for me.
Do you know? Well, in Sword Berserk, it where it goes to the main bad guy. I just got to add this one last thing in there. His name is Balzac. General Balzac.
I mean, I gotta know who came up with that. Like, at some point we need to, like, Google who came up with the nickname or the name General Balzac. Because, I mean, that's just amazing.
No, Zach.
Yeah, I get it. Mr. Balzac.
Yeah,
the ball stack.
I mean, it's a very basic kind of game. The storyline's strong. I mean, if you're a fan of the anime, that's something to definitely dig into just for the story itself. Besides that, I did play Silent Hill Shattered Memories for the Wii, and that's pretty fun. I didn't find really anything too wrong with that. I am a big fan of the Silent Hill series. What's cool about them is they're all standalone tales, so you don't have to know what's going on in previous games to enjoy one. You can just jump in at any title you want. And this one's really creative in the sense that you're led through the game that's paired off into sections where you're taking psych eval tests and different things like that. And depending on your choices, the game actually conforms to what you're choosing. And it's basically centered all around themes to scare you. Does this scare you more than that? They have you color a house at one point, and whatever you color it, you see it like that in the game at another point as you're going through the game. It takes it to a step beyond that, to while you're going through this abandoned town, trying to find your daughter who's missing, whatever you're looking at and interacting with the most is how the monsters are going to react to you when they come after you. Which is really cool. So, of course, there's porn throughout the game. Like, you know, like... Well, not porn, but big-breasted women, right, yeah. scantily clad. Yeah. And if you take too much time looking at that kind of stuff, the monsters that come at you are, like, big-breasted, and when they attack you, they're, like, hugging you and, like, almost dry-humping. It's creepy, dude. Yeah.
That's messed up. Oh, before we move on, mm-hmm. I wanted to take a step back here. You mentioned Berserk and all that.
Yeah, you're a fan of Berserk.
Totally.
I think you and I actually got into it around the same time.
Yeah, yeah. You've gone a little further into the mangas than I have. I sort mm-hmm. of stopped at the anime. But there's actually also a Berserk game for the PC.
Really?
It's on Steam. I haven't played it yet. I've been meaning to pick it up. As you mentioned, I am a big fan of Berserk. But yeah. I don't know absolutely nothing about it. I don't know if it connects to what we were talking okay. about.
So maybe check that out if you're into it, because yeah. apparently there's something new out that I don't know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, Berserk is a very interesting beast, because a lot of horror fans, I think, it gets glazed over, since it seems like it's got a strong fantasy vibe to it that overwhelms the horror aspects, but honestly, I find that anime to be as scary as some of the top-notched horror movies that I've watched.
Wait, you thought Berserk was a horror movie or show?
Well, I think the horror in it is strong enough.
No, come on now, it's like action sex. It's like action and porn.
Well, good this stuff. Is coming from a guy who can sit down with a little tin of cookies and enjoy people getting, like, murder, death, kill, raped, and tortured for hours and just giggle.
Well, yeah. Any other way to do it? I mean, forgot the milk.
Yeah, so we did play some Werewolf the Apocalypse World of Darkness RPG today.
Yeah, totally.
Which is a great RPG if you're into horror and you want something that has more of a story bend to it than your typical D&D of just killing to power up and not really worrying too much about the story behind it. World of Darkness books give you a lot to chew on. And you know a lot more about the Werewolf the Apocalypse setting than I do.
Well, I know. So, honestly, Werewolf was never my wheelhouse.
Which one was your favorite?
Which one was my favorite, or which one do I know the most about?
Well, probably. So they're different?
Well, yeah, kind of.
Okay.
My favorite in concept was Hunter. I loved the idea of it, but the game itself was shit.
Why? Just
the way they set up the characters and the rules that they want you to follow in it, it makes you so underpowered to do anything in it. You spend any RPG that's actually following the game style, the mm-hmm. game setup, you just spend the entire time either running away
right.
or creating these just ridiculous traps.
I see what you're saying. So yourself. You're basically, it's kind of like you want to play a game to be someone else, but you don't want to be a pussy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, come on. Let's be honest. If we're playing in this fantasy world, you want to be a badass. Why not?
Right.
I mean, I don't want to pretend to be a piece of
and
shit.
And what's cool about the World of Darkness setting, for those of you who don't know what it is, you're basically in our world, and they give really tight explanations of how these creatures, like vampires, werewolves, mummies, etc., are all coexisting with us without us knowing. What's cool about the explanation for that in the werewolf setting is something that they titled Delirium, where when you would see a werewolf, if you would happen to see one, your brain would go into this kind of flight mode where it wouldn't want to recognize what it's seeing. So it would exchange that for something that makes more sense to you. And they title that as Delirium, whereas you would actually be looking at a werewolf, but you would have your brain tell you, oh shit, there's a bear that escaped from the circus, or whatever's like most logical to you in that setting at that time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty badass. So we were playing that, and we had Carrie, the remake of Carrie, going on in the background. And this is the 2013 Carrie starring Chloe Grace Moretz and Julianne Moore. And it was kind of glazed over for the most part, but at the end of it, you said some interesting things that I wanted to just touch upon.
Yeah, that's
so you don't really care for remakes too much. For like,
well, remakes are great for what they are. They're great for special effects.
Okay.
Because every year we get better with our special effects and the CGI, so we can make things happen that didn't, that couldn't happen in previous ones, or things that happened, we can make them look better. So it's eye candy.
And I think the unleashing of Carrie's power in that movie is pretty intense. Comparing it to the older movie and what she does in that one, in this one, it's high octane.
Yeah, I guess. In my opinion, maybe it's just because it's been a few years, but I still was a bit underwhelmed. Though there were a few decent death scenes that I can definitely appreciate.
So you had said that she was the victim, and the people she was killing were not victims.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point of the movie. That's what, in my opinion, that's what the movie's about.
And you felt bad for her right up to the end?
Yeah. She has this mom that is just abuses her from day one. I mean, from second one, planning to kill her. You know, she comes out and she's already a threat for her life. And she spends her entire life with this crazy bitch that's just mistreating her. And then she goes to school and she's mistreated even more because she's fucked in the head because of this mom. Yeah, damn right I pity her. That woman, that freaking girl, worst life imaginable. So she gets a chance to get some payback against all the people that fuck with her? Hell yeah. Damn right, she's the victim.
Did not like the ending, though. The ending was just
the very
weird. Ending, yeah. Weird, dude.
You're right. Talking the very, very end, right before the credits.
So, yeah, this is spoilers, so skip ahead 5 seconds or so. But basically, at the very end, you're getting Carrie's grave just erupting and something potentially coming out of it. Like, you had mentioned how...
To be fair, all that actually happens is her headstone cracks. And it's like something's coming up. They don't actually... It doesn't actually erupt. But it does make it seem like we've got zombie Carrie coming or something stupid. And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, you had mentioned the how Jason Voorhees in the Friday the 13th series comes back, and I don't know. I kind of like the idea, just for the cheese factor of zombie Carrie.
But then they have to take the storyline out, in my opinion. You can't have the cheesy horror kill everybody movie and have a quality storyline. It just doesn't happen.
If you were doing that, would the mom come back too? Because the mom's my favorite character.
Oh, no, no. They'd have to find some other villain or something. Like, they'd have to...
No, but, like, what if they were a duo? Could you see them working together at this point?
God, I hope not. Like, I mean, unfortunately, I could see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, I really hope that they wouldn't do something like that. Just for the simple fact that I wouldn't want to see somebody like Carrie actually teaming up with their mom. Because then that woman is just fucking 10, 20 bricks shy of a full load, and I mean, why would you team up with somebody who tortured you your entire life? That's just nuts.
If Charles Band got the rights to this dude who did, like, the Puppet Master movies,
yeah,
he would totally go that route, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He'd probably throw in his puppets, too.
the sad part is I'd probably still watch it, but...
Yeah, but... Well, you would have to, because I would definitely watch it.
Yeah, yeah, and then I'd have to complain about how horrible it is, and how illogical it is. See, that's my issue. If there's a storyline, I want it to make sense. But if there is no storyline, then go as crazy as you want. And that's where... Those are the horror movies that I enjoy. Because also, in my opinion, horror movie storylines are almost always horrible.
And we're actually going to get into our main course right now. So that you can talk about a movie that I think fits right into what you were just saying.
Totally.
Alright, so today we're talking about Split 2016, directed by M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong. Rated PG-13, an hour of and 57 minutes runtime, considered a horror thriller. Not so sure about the thriller aspect there, definitely has got the horror.
Towards the end.
Yeah, I guess I don't know, maybe. So this is starring James McAvoy as our lead, and he's playing plenty of roles here. He's got, like, 7 different roles, and he's playing them all pretty well. I feel like his micro expressions as he's transitioning from character to character is convincing. And the reason why he's got so many roles here is because he's got multiple personality disorder, or as they're recognizing it now in the DSM, as dissociative identity disorder, or DID. And they're doing more of a... They're being very free-willed with their interpretation of DID, and just giving themselves a lot of creative leeway, making more of a, like, just... It's not a true approach to the mental deficiency or supremacy, whichever way you want to look at it. But it works for this film, and I think it's really cool. We are also given Anya Taylor-Joy as Casey Cook, Betty Buckley as Dr. Karen Fletcher, who plays as James McAvoy's kind of liaison in the world of crazy shit. She kind of, she's his psychiatrist, and she's helping him in all of his, what do they call them, multiples in the film? They have a specific term for it, but she's helping
alters,
that's it, and she's helping guide all of them through towards a better tomorrow. And yeah,
actually, strictly speaking, she's trying to help certain ones, as others have been banned from the personality themselves.
Correct. We're also given Haley Lou Richardson as Claire Benoit and Jessica Sula as Marcia. And yeah, so the three girls that I mentioned that I did not associate into the film yet, they're basically three girls that are kidnapped by James McAvoy towards the beginning of the film. And when I went into this movie, I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't hear anything prior to it. So I was like, oh shit, M. Night Shyamalan's going to be doing a torture porn. Fuck. Because he does get a little bit rapey towards the beginning of the film. James McAvoy, that is, towards these three girls. You eventually find out that he likes watching young women dance. But, yeah, well, one of his identities does. So, yeah, he's kidnapping these three girls, and then they wake up in just this dingy little underground hole. They definitely paint that for you in the... cinematography and the set design. You're given a very claustrophobic feel, and there's really not much around to show personality down here. It's just dead-like.
First time I saw it, I thought, my assumption was that they were in some old abandoned warehouse.
Really? Okay,
that was
yeah.
That my first thought.
I was thinking underground bunker.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Something like that. You know, right. Just out in the middle of nowhere is what I was thinking.
Yeah, it felt so devoid of any kind of life.
Totally.
And it definitely made you feel helpless as a viewer.
Yeah.
I feel like that was and that's permanent throughout the film. They really let you... Some films have trouble conveying, like I am right now, conveying what they want to say to the viewer. But this film does it wonderfully, at least in their set design and choreography. And James McAvoy's acting, of course, he's an incredible actor. I haven't seen him in anything that I did not like.
He's definitely one of my top five favorite right now.
I think he was in one other movie that had a horror bend to it, but I can't think of it offhand. Besides that, I've only ever seen him in non-horror. So I think this is his first approach to a legit full-length horror feature film.
Possible, I have no idea. Horror's not my niche, yeah. But
he is great in everything. Last King of Scotland, I think, was the title of one of them that he was in that I think it was the first one that I've seen him in, and that was a brutal movie.
Again, right over my head, never even
seen X-Men.
Yeah, of course
you've seen that.
Of course,
and he's badass in that.
Yeah, of course he is.
I didn't think. Anyone could take the helm from Patrick Stewart, but
yeah, I had my doubts as well. But he pulled it off beautifully.
He did, and he's great in this film. So yeah, Do you want to get into why he's, like, captured these girls? Why he's doing this? What do you think about it? Because I mean, there's so many different ways you can look at it.
Well, he's preparing for a sacrifice to, I guess, in my opinion, it's as close to a god as any other deity that people would believe in.
Now, he's switching from personality to personality, kind of like that, but it's always outside of a room. You don't really get to see the transition until the end.
Right, until the end.
So, yeah, as he's, like, coming forth with little clues towards what's going to be happening to these girls, and they keep trying to make escape attempts, you think that all of them were aware of this coming sacrifice, like all of the identities? Because there's a few identities at the beginning that are most prominent. There's one that's of a child. There's one that is kind of like the man's man, who is the one that kidnapped the three girls at the beginning. That's how I understood it.
Yes.
He wears glasses, I think.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that is a woman who's kind of like, she's very manipulative, and she likes to maintain control with her charisma,
right,
over the other identities, alters.
Typical, like, power office, or empowered female.
Right.
Sort of thing, yeah.
And was that it, towards, like, the beginning? Oh, no, there's the artist, who's mainly...
No. Don't. In the beginning, that's not the artist. That's,
right.
That's the dude with the glasses.
Right.
And he's only doing it to further the... I don't know, the back and forth with the therapist.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
All of the other alters.
He pretends that he is the artist,
yep,
and then she sees through it, so he comes out and says, yeah, yep, it actually is me.
Right.
But I didn't want to let you know that I was back, because he's one of the ones that she's trying to keep hidden, but he's coming out now and saying that he's not actually a bad dude.
Right. Well, yeah, basically. All of the other alters, if I remember well, there are 21.
Yeah, we don't actually see all 21.
No, but you do get to see a decent amount of them at one point in the movie.
Okay.
You get to see the little recorded clip bits that they're
doing.
That's
true.
Sort of like a video diary for each one. But the main thing that I thought was pretty amazing about the whole idea is that all of the other alters had banned the two, the male with the glasses and the female, because they were twisted. All the other alters knew that they were unhealthy, so they had banned them from what they call the light, or having control of the body.
And that's sort of like seen as, in my mind, someone stepping into the spotlight. Like, right, the control board.
Yeah. That's the way it was portrayed,
right,
definitely.
Yeah.
But they do get control, and then the movie unfolds where they are trying to unlock the full potential of the body as a whole, the personality as a whole, and what they could become.
Yeah, and this is kind of like where the film gets rather confusing and transformative, and really switches gears into, like, this straight-up twisted horror bend.
Love it. Love it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, so as the girls are trying to escape and blah, 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 he eventually separates the girls because of their behavior of not cooperating. And yeah, so it gets to the point where, like, he is starting to become figured out by his psychiatrist, who takes it upon herself to investigate and see what he's up to. And at the same time, he's transforming, and he becomes the Beast, which they keep saying, the Beast is coming, the Beast is powerful, the Beast can do whatever, and it's almost like there are 21 personalities reinforcing this belief in this one entity that is going to happen.
Right.
And when it happens, I'm thinking, this is going to be ridiculous. This is going to be silly as fuck. Because
I was so worried.
I mean, I thought he was just going to think that he could do all these things. And then, like, you know, you tell yourself, I can fly, I can fly. You can say it as many times as you want. You jump off a cliff, you're fucking dead, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, he's saying that he can fly, and, well, you don't get to see him fly, but you get to see him climb vertical fucking walls up to the ceiling. You bend see him, bars. Yeah, fucking take a shotgun blast.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. So, basically, when he transforms, he's... doing this stuff, I'm thinking, okay, I'm lost, what the fuck? And then he's eating the girls, and I'm like, whoa! I no longer understand this movie.
Totally fantastic, by the way.
So he's he eats two of the friends. Lead girl is Casey, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, and she's gonna be our... She's basically going to be our final girl for this scenario, and she's seeing her friends get eaten, and I'm just thinking, as she's running away from them being eaten, why is he eating? And I had all these questions, and I came to you, and I said, dude, I don't understand this movie, and you painted a good picture for me, and I want you to do that for the listeners who also might be confused or just want a new perspective on what they took from it.
Oh, yeah, I totally saw the ending coming. That didn't take away from the movie at all. Still one of my favorite movies.
And we are going to go into complete ending spoilers, so...
Alright, cool. So, basically, the whole idea is that he believes that he is the way he is because of what happened to him. Because he took the abuse that he did when he was younger, it made him stronger. He evolved, in a sense. All of those personalities coming out, all of this stuff, taking the abuse from his mom, which they kind of touch on. They don't go too deep into it, but they lead you to believe that it was pretty bad. So all of this makes him stronger, even though it's all stuff that he has to overcome, things that like totally rip apart his life, but it makes him stronger, which is what allows him to create the multiple personalities, which allows him to create this beast. And the beast wants to remove the unsoiled, the pure, the weak in his mind. Those who can't do what he's doing, because they're just fodder. They will never understand what they could be. And so in his mind, in the character's mind, the three personalities before the beast appears. They are collecting these three as a gift to their god.
Those three being the man's man, the child, and the woman.
Right, yes. Yeah. They're collecting them, and it actually does touch on that they are an offering or what's the right word? Basically a tribute,
right.
In a sense, that they are for the beast. They say it a few times in the beginning, though you have no idea what that means, other than to assume that these girls are going to die by it somehow.
Yeah.
So, at the very end of it, as you said, the two girls, one of them you do get to see being eaten, the other one obviously dead. He's going after the last girl, and...
This is another point where I'm like, yeah, dude, I don't understand your movie anymore, and you need to stop. Like I said, he's getting shot by her as she's running away. She gets behind some bars, and like you said, he bends those fucking bars to get in at her.
Right, and then he stops.
Yeah, and it's because he sees her tummy that has scars on it, and I'm thinking...
Hell yeah.
What?
She is abused. She is not pure. She has experienced at least some degree the same things that he has. So she has the potential for greatness that he does. Yeah. She is not weak. She is not just another cattle.
Now, this didn't hit home for me quite yet.
Okay,
when you said what you said.
Right.
But following that scene, he leaves her alone after saying, rejoice, something. Like, he's basically happy that she's been abused.
Right.
And then he leaves, and then she's found... Shortly after, I'm guessing a few hours, by someone in work attire, when he walks her out, she's been in an underground part of the local zoo this whole time.
Yep. under the
bridge. Yeah, and then, like, he gets her help, like, police, ambulance come, and then there is this theme throughout the movie that's peppered through, where there's moments that happen where the main character, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, who is our final girl right here, is put through the emotional ringer, and she's really tested. And during those times, it's showing how she's able to react to those situations that James McAvoy is putting her through. And they do that by showing her at a younger age and basically dealing with a very abusive uncle that she was obviously abused by in probably emotionally, sexually, and physically. So
it doesn't show it, but it
right,
does
it's,
lead
it's
to
very heavily implied.
Yep.
And I have no doubt that that's what's going on. So, yeah. And then it leads you to show, it leads you to see that her father dies and she's left to live with her uncle, which is where she's at now in the film. And the police take her back home, and she's outside of the house where her uncle's living, and she's like sitting there, and the police officer's like, is there something you want to tell me? And then I mean, that's it, that's how it's done. But there's like a little something you see in Anya Taylor-Joy's face, and I'm just like, you're ending it there? What's going on? But then you said what I'm going to have you say again now, and what you said earlier, and this, and everything else, made this movie go from, like, I don't know, I had it at maybe, like, a 4, up to, I would say, a 7 out of 10. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think most people see that and think that she's gonna do it, she's gonna tell this police officer everything, stop the abuse, you know, live a happy life, everything else. That's not the way I took it. Maybe that's the way they meant it to be. I saw it as she's going to be the next 21.
Yeah.
She's going to take control. She's going to...
She's split.
She's going to split. Yeah. And she's one of those personalities that's going to go say hi to Uncle.
Yeah.
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 Heck yeah.
So it's... Because there is like a little twitch at the end that she does, and she doesn't look the same.
No. No. She There's has a, this...
She's
this
not...
Cold,
she, yeah.
Detached.
It's not.
I'm prepared to deal with this.
It's not as subtle, and I don't know if that's because of her acting ability or if they just wanted it to be more obvious.
They
had her overreact.
I don't care which direction it went, but I'm going to believe that that's the way the rest of her life went, and she goes and she talks Mr. Uncle Touchy.
And we're actually going to get to find out, hopefully, because they're doing a sequel.
Really?
Yeah. Sweet. I forget what they're titling it now.
22.
But it's gonna tie in with the stinger that they show after midway through the credits, where you get to see Bruce Willis's character from Unbreakable, which is another film in the M. Night Shyamalan universe that he's obviously building to tie in certain movies to have its own kind of like spin-off franchise. And it's gonna have Bruce Willis in it, it's gonna have Samuel L. Jackson again, and it's going to have James McAvoy. I'm hoping Anya Taylor-Joy is going to be in there, because I do want to know.
Yeah, they probably won't, just because most movies like this end up disappointing me as soon as they bring out a second. But it would be amazing if she became some sort of, villain in and of herself.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't want her showing up being freaking the guy... what's his name? The lead character.
James McAvoy.
Yeah, I don't want her showing up being his sidekick. That would just be horrible for me. But for her to show up as like her own entity, you know, her doing her own thing and, you know, causing mayhem and another, that would be amazing.
And you really like these tortured characters. I mean, you really stuck around with Guts.
Absolutely.
And earlier today we were talking about another character. Game of Thrones, Arya is your favorite character.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah, okay. I'm just glad that you were willing and able to put that into perspective for the listeners, because I felt like it was very important.
Oh, I hope it helps.
It changed my mind on it, and that's not something that's easy to do from an outside perspective. So, yeah.
I love that movie, so...
Now, just talking a little bit more about horror and superheroes, it's not really prevalent that you would get to see a superhero kind of horror thing happening. This is more of like a supervillain horror thing, obviously.
Yeah, makes it better.
Yeah, so, this isn't something that you get to see often. In 2000, there was a film called Faust for the Love of the Damned. Wasn't a very good movie, but it was basically about dude loses his gal and to seek revenge on the people that took her out of the equation, makes a deal with the devil and becomes basically a superhero. Wears a ridiculous costume, sounds like Christian Bale in Batman, and has witty quips. He's also got Wolverine claws, and he finds out that... jokes on him, and bad things are going to happen after he starts seeking his revenge.
Wait, what? Making a deal with the devil's bad? Who knew?
Yeah, really.
Holy shit.
So, that was my first foray into superhero / supervillain / horror. And I was like, yeah, I don't know if... I like bad movies, so I did enjoy that for a reason. And it has the devil is played by the dude that plays the djinn in Wishmaster. And he's cool. So, yeah.
Whatever you say.
But still, it wasn't a good movie, and I can recognize that. Split is a good movie. And it makes me have promise for this new kind of wave of horror with a superhero / supervillain bend to it.
Yeah, so I absolutely loved the 21 character.
Yeah.
All the personalities. I thought he did a fantastic job with every single aspect of that movie, every personality he had, every scene he was in. I thought it was extremely believable, and I can't wait to see what they do with the next one.
Totally, man.
Especially throwing in Bruce Willis in there.
Yeah.
That's just the acting alone will make that movie worthwhile, but if they do it right, it could be amazing.
They gotta do a little bit of something to one of them, because they're both bald, and I don't want to see, like, two dudes being confused which testicle is the left and which one's the right.
Yeah, well, we'll just draw a line down one of them, and one can be the dick, and the other can be the bald.
Yeah. So, just to mention a little more about the superhero, supervillain horror, we're getting Venom coming up, which is supposed to be very horror-ish.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. And then,
if they do it right.
Sure.
Which they won't.
Well, it's going to be rated R, and the same people that... it's Sony. It's not Marvel. It's the Sony Marvel, not the Marvel. The Sony Marvel that was behind Deadpool and Logan. And Logan was pretty bloody.
Yeah, it's still not bloody enough.
They
never show the good stuff.
Well, maybe. I'm hopeful, but you're probably right. the last interpretation of Venom was the, like... What, Tobey Maguire? Is that what his name was? From that 70s show?
I stopped
show?
Watching them because they were just that bad.
I never walk out on a movie. I walked out on that movie. I was so upset.
Yeah. I can't watch those movies anymore.
It was bad. And we're also getting word that Todd McFarlane is talking with Blumhouse, which are the people behind Get Out and The Purge. And he's going to be doing a Spawn movie that is straight horror. It's going to have characters... This is the pitch that he gave to Blumhouse. Characters that are outside of Spawn. They're like in their own horror scenario with the monsters from Spawn. But Spawn's showing up now and then to interject.
I love it. I really dug the first movie, as crappy as it was. But going back to what we were discussing earlier, It doesn't try to be anything other than what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It knows it's a crap movie. It knows it's going to be ridiculous. It doesn't try to throw a lot of storyline at you. It just goes straight balls to the wall, action, ridiculous animated scenes. The scene with the lightning through the demons thing. That was so ridiculous, but
what?
I loved it.
Wait, what was it?
At the very end of Spawn.
Okay.
Spawn gets into hell with all the demons, and he does some sort of, like, crazy chain lightning
thing.
Oh,
I remember that now. It's like an ultimate death kill to everything. And the devil, they call him Malbolgia in this fantasy horror world. Yeah, and he just, like, kills all of these Malbolge has been building an army of spawns. Yep. Yep. And, like, you think, okay, well, it's an army of spawns, so this spawn is fucked because there's an army of them, and they're all supposed to be as powerful. But no, Spawn has the power of, I don't know.
He stole Odin's Thunderbolt. Who cares? Who gives a shit? It was great. But my point is, they don't try to lead you into some deep story. There's some character development, and there's a very general storyline to it. But the real point of the movie, and I love when movies do this...
Oh, John Leguizamo playing clown was funny as hell.
Right. It's just to be ridiculous. And when horror movies do that, in my opinion, that's when they excel. Because you're not going to have a horror movie with a great storyline unless you're 21, apparently. Because it's the only one that I've seen for quite some time that actually pulled off a legitimately, completely logical storyline... a great build. It covers everything. It doesn't leave dead ends. It's not just completely retardedly out there. Anybody who's not a psych major could believe all of the crap that it does say in
for
there.
Sure, yeah.
And they do cover some of it as well from the psychological aspect where she has
a lot of it's fantasized, but it works.
Right. There's a scene where the psychiatrist is talking to other shrinks and they're discussing why, like, how is this happening, you know, and all this other stuff. And it's all very believable.
It is. I mean, it's pissing people off in the DID community, but if you're not pissing someone off, you're doing something wrong.
Exactly.
And, I mean, I'm excited for... I do have a few titles to throw at you after this podcast of movies you should check out that are newer.
Well, you always do.
So, I think they're just as good, if not better. So... Yeah, let's... we have a mask discussion I wanted to do. Since we're talking about heroes and villains and all this and that. I mean, we're staying away from the mask now in a lot of horror, which is something I really like. I love the masked characters. Jason Voorhees, you got the Ghostface Scream character. You've got Michael Myers. There's so many cool ones.
I think that's just a cultural thing.
Yeah, probably. But part of my freelance work that I do is I get into a giant animal costume, and no, I'm not a furry. I'm not going to say what kind of animal it is
because I can't say
what company I'm
working
for.
You know, you take that costume home.
But it's basically, I get in there, and then I act like a fool. It's tiresome because it's a high-energy kind of thing that I have to do, and I get injured a lot. But... it's fun, and I'm not like how I am when I'm in the costume with the giant fucking head on me, like I am in real life. Like, it's two different people. I can act so crazy and do shit that I would never, ever do in normal day-to-day life when I'm in that, and I don't feel... It's almost like when you're drunk and you kind of, like, have those lower inhibitions. It's like you lower expectations of yourself at that point, and life is just much more freer. And, it just feels like you can breathe more. So I don't know what you think about why they're staying away from that. I kind of take it as, like, maybe they're trying to make it more scary as a fact that, like, this dude doesn't need to hide what he is.
I don't necessarily believe that. I think it all boils down to they're trying to appeal to their target audience, which is the mass whole of everybody. And people are just tired of the Scream and Jason and somebody... Somebody in a mask chasing people around. I am. It's been so overdone. There's so many movies out there. All of the horrors from back when I was a teenager or a kid, they all had that same theme. Somebody in a mask chasing somebody else, usually a chick, up some steps, out a window, and then somebody dies. You know, it's... they're trying to find something new, trying to mix it up. And I think it has more to do with just them trying to get attention than it has to do with the psychology behind what is scary and what isn't. Now, because, let's be honest, who's actually afraid... at horror movies. I mean, sure. Yeah, I jump.
I think you become desensitized over time. Right. And that's something that's definitely applicable to yourself and me.
Which is why
Christina hasn't seen as many as we have, so she's a little bit more jumpy.
Right, but I think that's also why horror movies today have just... All they are is just jump scares. What did you call them? Is that what they call jump scares?
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just one jump scare after another.
A lot of them, yeah.
And that's supposed to be... That's supposed to count as horror nowadays. And that, in my opinion, is just sad.
Well, a lot of them, but not all of them.
Right.
I mean, there's still a lot... I could agree with you, especially for modern-day PG-13 horror.
Yeah.
That's definitely prevalent in those. But in the indie horror, you're getting a lot more creativity and less cheap thrills. The reason why we're getting a lot of the same kind of thing in the main box office is because it works, and Hollywood's controlled by businessmen.
Right, exactly. And
that's, why change something that works?
And that's the point that I was getting at with the mask versus no mask, is it's just masks are overdone.
Yeah,
but they have been done for quite some time, which is why things like The Purge came out. What people want to see is their neighbors.
Uh-huh.
Wandering next door and just starting to kill people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... The mass public doesn't want to see some faceless somebody somewhere chasing some random girl through a field anymore. They want it to be more personal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? People have become desensitized to the typical horror. So now they have to make it more personal. Is my opinion. That's just my takeaway on it.
Now, some argument could be weighed in saying, well, it's because of the actors, because the actors want their pretty faces to be shown.
Oh, get over yourselves.
So you don't think that?
In my opinion, actors have no say in whether or not they get shown or not. They're told to show up at this time, weigh this much, do this and do that, and so do the actors have a say in what exactly gets put on film? I kind of highly doubt it. And honestly, if that's the case, that's just kind of sad and really ridiculous. And to me, hearing that makes me think that whoever's saying it just has something against actors or believes that they're overpaid or this or that or prima donnas, or they just have some personal agenda and
so
are trying to push it.
You don't think that's something...
No, I do not think that's legitimate at all.
Okay.
But then again, like I said, I'm not a critic. I'm not huge on...
Yeah. It seems like they're really working towards getting big names for these lead roles, and because of that, I don't know, it was definitely a thought that crossed my head that could be a reason why they're trying to stay away from the masks, but...
Nah, I
kinda
doubt it.
The Strangers in 2008 was one of the more recent horror movies that had a masked character that I really appreciated. It was a wife, husband, and a daughter that are terrorizing a random couple in a secluded home. And they're masked throughout from beginning to end. And it's horrifying. That's a good fucking home invasion movie. Beyond that, there was a recent one last year called Hush, and that's currently still streaming on Netflix. That had a masked character, but not more than, like, maybe quarter of the way through the film, he takes it off, and then it has this whole different kind of vibe to it that feels more refined. So, I don't know, maybe there's something to say about that. Maybe it is, like, it's still got its punch, but maybe it's just evolving. It's becoming a different beast.
I don't know. To be honest, my opinion on what I want to see, the only time I think a mask should be in a movie is when it actually makes sense. Somebody's robbing a bank, somebody's pulling off a murder, and there's going to be a witness, they're trying to get away with it. People don't find masks scary anymore. I mean, unless you're deathly afraid of clowns and somebody comes at you with a clown mask. I mean, what's a mask going to do? Why? I do not understand the fear behind masks. If I saw some dude walking up to me with a mask, I would laugh and then kick him in the nuts. Because, I mean, quite honestly, he can't see my legs. He's wearing a freaking mask. How scary can he fucking be? So, I mean, you know, it's... I don't see the scare factor in it. Apparently, to some degree, you do.
Yeah.
But, in my opinion, it would be much more terrifying to see some dude walking towards me covered in blood splatter, not giving a fuck, you know, completely buck-ass naked, you know, carrying even a severed dick. You know, that to me, that would scare the shit out of me. I would run the other direction.
What if it hit you in the back of the head and he said, I think you're pretty?
Well, then I'd stop and pull down my pants.
Well, let's get into the crumbs here. Bon appétit. All right, we're into the crumbs section, the last section of our show. And as I said at the beginning, this is just something random that I like to do, so it's not necessarily going to be too related. Chris, when... sorry, Delarthian. Okay, yeah. You found out what his real name is.
Thanks for that.
But yeah, Delarthian, you and I play a lot of RPGs, lots of World of Darkness. That's our favorite.
Sure.
And in them, you play a lot of really fucked up characters.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
yeah, so I just wanted to basically put a scenario out there. Because in the games that we play, you always come up with very creative ways to be evil. And you do like to play evil people. I don't know why, you're such a good guy.
I play selective... evil.
Okay.
It's never pure evil.
So my question to you is, you have unlimited resources in this scenario, okay?
Okay.
And there's a dude, maybe dudes, okay?
Yeah.
But they have killed one of your loved ones, someone very close to you. Maybe several people close to you. And you can imagine how they did it in a grotesque manner. However, but they're gone either way. And they obviously did it. You know it. You find out that they did. Your unlimited resources. How do you react to the situation? Call the cops?
Hell no. Why the fuck would you do that? That's just stupid. You're never going to prove it. They'll never see a moment in jail. And even if they do, they probably have friends in there and be club med. So... You don't do anything at first. You walk away.
Nothing.
You don't even talk to him.
For how long?
However long it takes you to set up the rest of it. you set up some sort of dungeon, some sort of something somewhere out in the middle of nowhere, something away from everything.
Underneath a zoo.
Hey, boy, sure, why not? You know, anything to cover up the screams. Then you get that person down there, well, people, whatever it is.
Right.
You get them alone, you make sure you got plenty of...
Let's focus on one person, okay. Just so we know what you would do to one individual.
Alright, well, you get medical supplies, you need to keep them alive.
Okay.
Because, well, you know,
first off,
gotta be worse.
We already know that you can stalker, like, legit find someone at a vulnerable moment,
well,
and you're a big dude, like I said, so you can...
Well,
chloroform and
well,
drag them along.
But,
so you, I think you could get that aspect of capturing them down. Okay.
But even if you couldn't, you just said I have unlimited resources. And I wouldn't do it myself if I had unlimited resources, because then my face would be right there if anybody saw something.
Okay.
It would be much better to go find some homeless person to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, well, if anything happens, I wasn't involved in that. I have no idea what you're talking about. But anyway... You know, cover your own ass, people. If you ever decide to go capture somebody, this is the way to do it. But anyway, so you get them down there and, well, pretty much use your, my imagination, which, from what you tell me is worse.
You can
than
get as sick and twisted as you want on this show.
I'd start with paper cuts, go to salt when they're getting sleepy, start removing body parts, but surgically, so stay alive. I would want it to last... a week, 2 weeks, maybe more. To be quite honest, I would probably torture them to the point of insanity And then I would leave them in the basement, being injected whatever nutrients and whatnot that they needed to survive, until they died of, well, what's the word for not being able to move? Atrophy.
Yeah.
Until they atrophied to death. Like that dude in Seven.
Yeah. I remember in one of the... World of Darkness games we did. I forget what kind of character you were playing, but you did a really twisted scenario for...
You're talking about the Brujah.
The dudes that, like, were crawling away while banging themselves. Like, describe that to them, man.
Yeah, in that story... Now, your original question was based in reality.
Right.
You're talking now things with powers, people with powers, things like that. I think one of the best tortures would be to anything that has the ability to heal rapidly, would be to break their bones.
So if you're going up against a vampire, for instance.
Or Wolverine.
Okay.
You know.
So let's not go into Wolverine.
Hey, Wolverine
so
gets
let, into... Let's say a vampire. So if the vampire was in this situation that, you know, it murdered this loved one of yours and you find out they're a vampire.
You break their joints.
Okay.
You know, bend their elbow backwards, their knees... And then you tie them so that they heal, but they heal improperly. When you break it back, it kind of hurt far more than it did breaking it the first time. Not to mention they get to be uncomfortable the entire time and immobilized. So in the chronicle you were describing, this was done to a group of guys that had done something heinous to someone that we cared about. And... Their joints were broken, so all they could do was sort of like worm crawl away. And to anyone who's ever seen Centipede...
Human Centipede.
A Human Centipede. It was sort of like that, but they were attached to each other in a much more interesting way. So that as they were squirming and worming, they were also having fun with each other. But again, this is fantasy...
This is what Dalarthian considers fantasy. This is what he goes and lays
up
in bed and right, warm glass of milk. Ah, good times.
Hell yeah. Why not? Sure.
Oh, man.
That's good stuff.
Interesting bedtime stories for you when you were a kid, I'm sure.
you wouldn't believe.
All right. Well, I just want to wrap it up there. We're a little bit over time, but I was happy to get you on board for a discussion. Thanks for joining us today, Dalarthian.
Yeah, no problem.
Do you have any final words for the listeners?
Don't be as evil as me. Have fun.
Yeah, there can only be one.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed this show, you can find out more stuff Cakewolf at cakewolf.com. If you go to paddedroom.podbean.com, you can find more Cakewolf podcasts as well as Padded Room podcasts, who we are syndicated with. They are great friends of ours. They run a way better show. And, yeah, just all around great people that are as sick and twisted as us. So if you didn't mind us and you listen to the end and you're not getting a shotgun ready, then check out the Padded Room podcast. All right, guys. So thank you so much. You have yourselves a great day. You're a sick motherfucker.
Whatever.
Yeah,
I get it.
Excuse me now!
What is with you guys? How about shutting up for a change, okay? I already fed you.
Beware the moments.
Yeah. What the hell was that all about?